John 2, 1 through 11 says, "On the third day there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, 'They have no wine.' And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come.' His mother said to the servants, 'Do whatever he tells you.' Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, 'Fill the jars with water,' and they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, 'Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward.' So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, 'Everyone serves the good wine first, and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk. But you have kept the good wine until now.' Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him." The word of God for the people of God. Please be seated. Well, the Man in Black played many live shows, and a good number of them were at prisons. Some of you are probably aware of his concerts recorded and then released from Folsom Prison and San Quentin, but those were just two. Part of Johnny Cash's legacy was that he would take his act to prisons across the country and play for the prisoners there. And most of the sentiment or most of the thought about Johnny Cash would believe it that he did so because Johnny Cash was just a tough, hard, mean guy. He fit right in the prisons, right? That was what people thought. He's Johnny Cash. Of course he wants to hang with prisoners. He had a reputation for being that, but most of that was just an image. For instance, did you know that Johnny Cash did not really shoot a man in Reno just to watch him die? That did not actually happen. Yeah, Johnny Cash fell on some hard years. He fell on some hard times for substance abuse, of which he overcame. But Johnny Cash's connections with prisoners came from something much deeper. His biographer, Michael Stresguth, said it was his faith. That's not something you hear very often. We know that Johnny Cash was a man of faith, but we didn't necessarily know that he went to all these prisons and played for the prisoners because of his faith. His biographer said he connected with this crazy notion that a person could be redeemed. Johnny Cash advocated for prison reform throughout his career. In fact, the concert that you would have looked at in the opening part of the worship service, he was either playing at San Quentin or Cummins in Arkansas. Johnny Cash got to see and talk with prisoners and learn about the conditions there. And what he learned during that time was that prisons were places of abuse, physical, sexual abuse, abuse by the guards, poor living conditions. And some of us might say, well, they're prisoners. Of course, they deserve that. But Johnny Cash didn't think so because, once again, Johnny Cash believed that everyone was made in the image of God and everyone could be redeemed. Prisons were supposed to be places of rehabilitation in his mind, not punishment or casting aside for all time, but places of rehabilitation. These places, these prisons, were full of, at least society thought, dirty, rotten, unclean scoundrels. No chance of transformation there, right? I want you to keep that question in your back pocket for just a moment. Today we do focus on Jesus' first miracle. We focus on the wedding at Cana, where Jesus not only gave his first miracle, but gave what he called his first sign. A sign that would be a light to the nations. A sign that would magnify and show and prove God's glory through Jesus Christ. We find at this wedding Jesus, his mother, and the disciples at the wedding. Some of you have been involved in weddings, whether you were the bride or the groom or just a participant. And I'm guessing that you've been to some pretty big weddings. Maybe you were in a big wedding yourself. Maybe it was small, but at the very least, I'm guessing you've been in one that was big. And if you spent too much time around Asheville, you know that this is a place for destination weddings, right? People will spend a few bucks to have their weddings here, from what I understand. People will plan weddings years in advance to have them at Biltmore or in Montreat or at the Grove Park Inn, wherever they can find it. Weddings are a big deal when you have a wedding in Asheville or Black Mountain or one of our surrounding communities. But I would say that they rival the weddings of the ancient Middle East. You see, this was a week-long, years-in-the-making celebration, this wedding was, that they would have gone to. This wasn't an hour or two or a few hours on a Saturday. This wedding was a week-long celebration. The whole community joined in. Everything was to be made perfect. And so they hit a bit of a snag. Snag is probably too nice a word, because if the wine is getting ready to run out in the middle of the wedding celebration, that is not good. And I don't just mean people are going to get thirsty. That's almost like the whole celebration is falling apart. Someone had done some pretty bad planning, and it was brought to Jesus' attention. Some of you may know what that feels like at your wedding. I'm sure we probably have some stories in here about particular things that happened during a wedding that may have shocked you or made you a little nervous. I know that one thing that Valerie and I can look back on and laugh is that when we entered our wedding cake started to fall over. Now, it never actually fell all the way. They were able to separate it. The photographer did a wonderful job of photoshopping the cake back together, so if you saw wedding pictures of us, you wouldn't know any different. And quite frankly, we weren't that concerned about it. But people were pretty, put off by it. People couldn't believe this was happening. The bride and groom's wedding cake was falling apart. But once again, that paled in comparison to what was about to happen at this wedding in Cana. They would have wished their cake was falling over if that was the only problem they were going to face. But they were getting ready to run out of wine. A serious miscalculation that would have ruined the wedding festivity. Now, I know as Baptists, you don't understand what I'm talking about because they're drinking wine at their weddings. But it was a big deal. And after some exchange, that's where the story gets fascinating. There were six big pots, empty pots probably by the door, that were set aside for cleansing. For a Jewish ritual where someone could have come from outside, from out in the worldly area, and they could have cleansed themselves of all of that outer filth. And yes, in some ways, maybe literally filth, but of course, in this particular circumstance, they would cleanse themselves of that non-Jewish filth. They had maybe come into contact with animals or people. Maybe they had walked by a Samaritan or a leper or walked near a leper community, and they needed to get that dirtiness off of them. And so they had these big jars they could just stick their arms down into. When they pulled them back up, because the jars of water were blessed, they would be clean. They would be cleansed. Jesus saw those jars and had an idea. You see, symbolically, those jars would have been dirty, dirty, dirty. All the filth that everyone washed off of themselves would have been on the sides of those jars. And Jesus said, "We're going to fill those jars up." Jesus turned what would have been ordinary contaminated water, not meant for drinking, not meant for anything other than getting the filth off of you, Jesus turned it into something good. Jesus turned it into something useful and something that was worth celebrating and something that revealed God's glory. This is no mere miracle. It's important that we make that distinction. The book of John makes those distinctions. Miracles are not acts in and of themselves. This was a sign that was pointing to something bigger. In one fell swoop, when Jesus changed the water into wine, Jesus was showing us and signaling that a new era had come, that there is no longer ritual ceremony that cleanses us, only Jesus. That when life appears chaotic and broken, Jesus is there to save us. Jesus showed us through this sign that the ordinary can be made extraordinary when Jesus has a hand in our lives. Jesus' first sign teaches us so much. And with that, most importantly, is the sign that Jesus' salvation is all about joy and celebration. I can't imagine a better sign for the prisoners at Folsom Prison or San Quentin or Cummins Prison to hear. When Johnny Cash spoke about the miracle of Jesus turning the water into wine, I wonder if they heard, "Here we are, a bunch of dirty pots just sitting here. We're filthy, we're rotten, we represent all that is wrong in the world. And yet Jesus changed those dirty pots into something worth celebrating, something that was useful." I wonder if the prisoners saw God's glory in that testimony and thought, "Hey, I can be transformed. I can be made new. I can be made into something joyful. I can be made into something useful. I can be made into something that brings God glory." They heard a story of transformation, and not just any transformation, but a transformation from Christ, who has come to transform our individual lives and our world. This past week in preaching class, we talked a little bit about transformation that can come through preaching. And one of the distinctions we talked about is the distinction between change and transformation. You see, if something changes, it can be switched back. We can change things back and forth, sort of like we change the lights from on to off, or we change every season or every year from the air conditioner to the heater. It's superficial, but to be transformed means that there is something deep and permanent and meaningful that occurs in our lives. And so today's story about Jesus changing water into wine can tell us many things about Jesus and the glory of God. But what I hope we'll take from this today is that Jesus has come to transform us from something ordinary, just like the prisoners, this is true of all of us, from something that is unclean and needs cleansing and needs forgiveness, into something worthwhile, something that can be used to bring God glory, something that can bring joy to the world around us, no matter how low we feel we have gotten. And so this sign of Jesus is a sign to the world of transformation. And I ask you now, like water into wine, are you being transformed? Are you allowing Jesus to transform you into something that is good and useful, which, by the way, you are? But are you allowing that pot to fill up to the brim? Are you allowing yourself to be all that God has called you to be? To have a testimony of transformation and to go forth into the world to speak of how Jesus has changed you. And I ask the same thing of this church as a whole. Do we as a church have a testimony to share? Are we being transformed into something new? Are we allowing Christ to continue to work a miracle in the life of this congregation so that we can be useful and bring joy to Black Mountain? I hope so, because transformation is good news. It is good news to the world. It is good news to us. Yes, change can be scary at times, but we should look at ourselves as being like the pots of water that were miraculously changed into that wine. As you go from here today, as we go from here, let's continue to reflect on and pray about how Christ will continue to transform us as individuals and also as a church family, so that we can take God's light to the world, that God will be glorified through our transformation. Let's pray together.